Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This week on Rewind, your week in review.
Because under my plan, everyone can win.
Democrats, once again, have rejected a significant tax break.
Governor Tony Evers vetoes the $392 million package of tax cuts crafted by Republicans. The governor says it did nothing to help fund schools, but Republican leaders say Evers missed a chance to cut income taxes. What important decisions, yes or no, will state senators face when they meet one last time in March? Pollsters ask Wisconsin Democrats, who do you like for president before the April 7 primary? And an Antigo native is chosen as a new leader of the Wisconsin National Guard. That and JR's Wispolitics stock picks on the February 28 edition of Rewind, your week in review.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm JR Ross.
I think Rewind's 2 or 3 weeks ago, I think I opined that I thought the governor and the Republicans would come up with some compromise on a tax cut. So crow doesn't taste very good, JR. So let's just take a look at what happened.
Okay.
The governor vetoed the GOP's income and business tax cut, saying what I recommended was $250 million of the surplus to fund two-thirds of K-12 costs. Republicans did not reduce property taxes. His plan did. And the Republicans, let's look at what he vetoed. Republicans and two Democrats, Mr. Milroy and
Doyle
of on Alaska. The plan the governor vetoed, sorry, $247 million cut in income taxes, $44 million cut in business taxes. And the response, before we hear from both the governor and Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald, Speaker Voss says, we may come back in May to override. Mm-hmm. Remember that passed 65-34, so you'd have, they're one vote away from potential override in the Assembly, but never going to go anywhere in the Senate.
No.
Right?
And nobody's going to flip, nobody's going to flip their vote in the Assembly, so it's not going to the Assembly either. So and the question would be for Milroy and Doyle, do they vote to overturn a veto on their governor, or they vote to flip their vote on the tax cut?
Okay, before we go deeper in that, let's take a look at what Speaker Voss said in his statement. In the last 4 years, Republicans have increased state aid by 15%, increasing per student funding by nearly $1,000. The current budget made the largest investment in K-12 schools in actual dollars and doubled the current funding for student mental health programs. Okay, help me understand, why was I wrong in predicting that they'd agree on a tax cut?
Well, a couple of things. One, they didn't give Evers anything that he wanted. He wanted money for education, and he wanted that money for education to be the vehicle to lower property taxes. Republicans embraced none of what he called for. So what's interesting was I heard the argument from Republicans this week of, oh, we gave him money, a budget for education, so he wouldn't come halfway to us on this. I'm not sure about you and your spouse, but I don't make the argument about my spouse and talking about compromise. But anyway, they didn't get anything from them. So now going forward, the question I have is who can manage the message better? So for Evers, the message is, look, these guys say there's no time for compromise, even though it's February. They're saying they're going home 2 months into the year.
Assembly adjourned.
Now, you and I know the rhythm of the Capitol and how that works and why it works that way. So we understand that. The voter back home, does he or she understand, okay, why leaving in February? Why can't they compromise? Why can't they get to a deal done on a tax cut for me or more money for my schools in the next couple weeks? Why can't they do that? For Republicans, the message is the governor doesn't want to cut your taxes. There's surplus money. He wants to grow government, not give it back to you. It's
right,
a simple
which
message.
Builds the base. Hmm? Both Speaker Voss and Fitzgerald said, look, the governor's focus is, as we're about to hear, more money, more money, more money, and that just builds the base of state spending. And when you cut income taxes, it's something you can dial up and down. Yeah.
So they're not going to raise taxes. Republicans never vote to raise an income tax in Wisconsin. So,
well, that's very true. But the result here is that $392 million in the GOP tax package stays in the state treasury. That boosts the money available when they start on the next budget cycle deliberations.
Assuming the projections hold tight. Now, I've looked at my 401k the last week and a half.
Don't want to.
Nor my boys' education funds. But you know, if this is a temporary nosedive and it's going to revert, okay, everything's good. But if this is the beginning of a recession or an economic pullback of some sort,
yes,
those projections won't hold true. So maybe, in a way, having this money in the till will be good for the next budget.
Silver lining, potentially.
Plus the $1 billion, it'd probably be less than a billion then if the things go south in the rainy day fund, but there'd be a cushion there. If things still hold, for Evers, there's still a silver lining here because he gets to build a budget in January, February of next year that takes all of this extra money. Guess who's going to plow it into?
K-12.
Meet two-thirds funding.
Special ed.
Mental health services.
Mental health.
He will build that in this education budget, and then he'll say, okay, Republicans, here's my budget, and then they'll get knocked for cutting, I use quotation marks for cutting, education under Evers because they'll still have an increase for education.
Right.
Maybe less than what Evers wanted. So then they got to message that with voters, you know, next year.
Right. And you and I just recently looked at the Department of Revenue estimates, tax collections from July through the end of January. They're still up over 7%.
Oh, yeah.
7%.
Now, for Republicans, the other thing that you hear is, look, they've done big increases for education, back-to-back budgets. They still don't get credit for it. So they don't see, and they're not paying a price at the ballot box for it, right? So if they're not losing seats over education funding, what's the incentive to go do what the governor wants when they can feed their base with an income tax cut, right? So I think that's part of the thought for them of, look, this isn't going to help us. This will. Plus, it achieves our goal of shrinking the size of your tax bill and government. So they're going to go that direction on things.
Okay, that's enough from us. Let's listen to the exchange between the governor when he talked about his vetoes and the response from Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald.
I'm open to making additional payment on our state debt. I'm also open to considering an income tax cut. I'm also open to a plan that provides more property tax relief than what my original plan proposed. But I will not accept a plan that continues to let local taxpayers foot bills the state should have to pay. And I will not accept a plan that doesn't invest in our kids and our schools from mental health education to special education. And I don't care who gets the credit. I just know that people of our state deserve elected officials that get things done. And funding our schools and reducing our property taxes should be something we can agree on. So I'm hopeful that Republicans will come to the table and work with me so we can get this done for our schools, our kids, and our property taxpayers.
Democrats, once again, have rejected a significant tax break for Wisconsinites. We're not the ones who ever abandoned two-thirds in the first place. It was Governor Doyle that did it. And since then, we have always been, I think, fair when it came to allocating that part of the budget. We've always made the case that, listen, we hear from our school districts as well, and we know what their needs are. The idea that this revenue is there for us to spend one more time just doesn't make any sense. And with, you know, him being the superintendent as many years as he was in Wisconsin, he's got a soft spot, and it's always going to be more money, more money, more money into education. And ignoring other parts of state government, which I think is really going to be kind of his Achilles heel going into this next budget cycle.
Governor says there's still time for compromise. Is there still time?
No, the assembly is adjourned. He knew that. We all knew that when the assembly wrapped up their business last week. No, there's no time for compromise right now.
Now we have two organizations doing statewide polling. It's no longer the exclusive franchise of Charles Franklin and Marquette. So now I want to welcome the polling from the UW-Madison Elections Research Center, which came out a few days before yesterday's Marquette poll. And let's take a look at what it found. Bernie leading 29%, followed by Bloomberg and then Biden and then Pete and Elizabeth and Amy. And but now let's jump to what Mr. Franklin released yesterday. Also having Bernie at 29, Bloomberg at 17, Biden at 15, and then Pete and Elizabeth and Amy, and I don't know them well enough to use their first names, but I think they'll forgive me. Mm-hmm. So here's the point. Sanders leading on both statewide polls, and then Bloomberg second, followed by Biden. But the cratering, talk about the cratering of support for the former vice president, JR.
Well, Joe Biden was at 30% in November, the Marquette poll, now he's at 15. In the UW poll, he was tied with Bloomberg, who's gone from 6% in the Marquette poll in January up to second place. Also, don't forget Elizabeth Warren. She was in second place in October in the low 20s. Now she's at 9 in the Marquette poll.
Right.
two things have happened with there. One, a couple things. One, Charles Franklin said a month ago, wait for Iowa, New Hampshire. They will shake up the pecking order in the Wisconsin poll because people like a winner. They like to see, you know, if there's momentum, they're going to latch on to that. Bernie Sanders has momentum from tying in Iowa essentially with Mayor Pete, winning New Hampshire, winning Nevada. He has got momentum. People gravitate toward that. Two, with Joe Biden, he's now competing with Mayor Bloomberg and all his money, along with Mayor Pete, for the moderate lane, right? Amy Klobuchar, she has gained some momentum. So when you see Klobuchar, Mayor Pete, and Mayor Bloomberg all getting momentum, who's that at expense of? Joe Biden. So he's struggling with that right now. Warren, she was the media darling back in October last year, November. I saw national headlines proclaiming that her march to the nomination was almost inevitable. But what happened? Medicare for All came out. The spotlight got really intense. Think of Howard Dean in 2004, Rudy Giuliani in 2008. There's this rhythm to a presidential campaign where somebody catches fire and becomes like the it thing. That glare gets really intense, and then he or she fades away for the first primaries, and that's the Warren phenomenon.
When I was on the exercise machine, CNN reported that Sanders is going to Massachusetts, where he may beat Elizabeth Warren in her home state. It just gets really, really fascinating.
Now, if Joe Biden can do well in South Carolina, which is the first state with a really significant African-American population of the four.
60% of the projected Dems are African-American.
If he does well there, it resets the table. Okay, now he's got momentum going to Super Tuesday. Now he's got something to latch on to. But if he doesn't, you know, what's going to happen? Now, the other thing to look forward to is our primary. We're not until April 7th. Super Tuesday will come and gone by then. We're going to have weeks between that and our vote.
We're going to have a different discussion 1 week from to now.
But
today, excuse me.
But if Sanders doesn't run away with this whole thing, what's the incentive to drop out? This point's made to me this week because we're looking at the possibility of a brokered convention.
And Bloomberg was asked, am I going to quit? No.
Because here, Bloomberg has the money. If you think about a brokered convention, right, so they'll have a vote with everybody's delegates and they'll cast them proportional to what their votes were. Or the delegates they won, I should say. After that, superdelegates come into play. Are those party delegates going to back a Bernie Sanders candidacy? Now, if Bernie gets to 45%, that's a lot different than being at 29, 30, 31, 32.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So what happens then, if you are anybody in this race, you have an incentive to stick around because, hey, you might catch fire, and then you may become the Sanders alternative at that convention. So I heard that through this week, and it makes some sense. Mayor Bloomberg, of all of them, he has the money to stick around until July, no matter what happens.
Okay, two other dimensions on the Charles Franklin poll that I want to talk about. The approval and disapproval rate, 48-48 on the president. And you noted it in a newsletter, this is the first time that hasn't been upside down?
First time he has not been upside down since he took office. So he's dead even now. What's interesting is his job approval is like it's inched up each poll. Like the last year, each movement's been within the margin of error, so it's not significant movement. But now overall, it has been moving up. So is that the economy? Probably. I mean, on the economy, he gets good marks, like 56%, 56-41, I think, was his approval in the economy. That's probably driving it, which is why this stock market kind of correction, whatever word you want to use for it, is the threat that he sees because if the economy is going well, people have confidence in the economy, they have confidence in him. That economy stuff goes away, then he's really in trouble.
Okay, and the Charles Franklin poll also said it was a margin of error race, Mr. Trump and all the six Democrats.
Think back in your long history. Name me one president, incumbent president, who's got a 56% job approval on the economy with a stock market that hit record numbers in his term, who's had growth the entire time, who's even been in a tied race this early. I mean, it's all a reflection of Trump as a person and his Twitter account, and the baggage that comes with them that's keeping this race close.
Okay, but just on a final note, Quinnipiac University poll showed the Democrats winning in Pennsylvania, Michigan, but in Wisconsin, Trump beating all that.
That poll was
all the
like,
Dems.
That sample was, okay, Charles Franklin, every time he does a poll, tells you like what the partisan makeup was of that sample.
Yes.
His long-term average, going back to 2017, because he's already, there's a realignment post-Trump, right, with rural, white, blue-collar voters, especially men, has been like a plus one or plus two Republican sample. That's his long-term average. that Quinnipiac poll was like plus 6 or 7 Republican. So, like, as a geek, I go, okay, maybe. I mean, maybe it's the harbinger of things to come.
Right.
But you have two polls since then saying, no, it's here. So, and I sometimes I hesitate to compare poll to poll to poll because the methodology is different. I watch trends. I use the Marquette poll as a trend. The trend line is Trump's approval is getting better. The race is staying tight. Sanders has momentum in the Democratic primary.
Okay. The Assembly went home last week. Mm-hmm. Which means that they put a bunch of bills on the Senate. They sent a bunch of bills to the Senate and take it or leave it. So let's go through some of those. Number one, the $36 million in farm and small business aid. For it to become law, it cannot be changed mm-hmm. unless you're going to bring the Assembly back. I see that one getting approved, don't you?
I hesitate to say yes or no on anything because I don't know they've caucused yet to have that conversation. Like you've talked about this for 1,000 times. It's the Fitzgerald methodology, right? The caucus finds its balance. It comes in and counts votes when it's found its balance. So is there an incentive to do something for farming? Yes. But I've heard rumblings that there's a core group, wing, whatever you call it, of that Senate GOP caucus that doesn't want to spend money outside the budget. So what are they going to do? Will they do pick bits and pieces, the whole thing? I don't know. Now, there are tax cuts in there, so that might get their attention. But again, I mean, I don't want to like diminish the chance of it getting done. I hold off on saying anything until I've seen those guys caucus and heard what comes out of that caucus.
Well, I'm done making predictions. So let's move to the second one. The $10 million clean water package. Okay, I'm going to go out on a limb with you. There seems to be more of a consensus for this. You agree, disagree?
I have heard lots of rumbling about the spending
on
that.
Oh, what a pessimist. Okay, $10 million?
So, okay, there's the issue. If you can find money that's not general purpose revenue, then yeah, it can get done. Go back to... that homeless bill that finally passed the Senate.
$500,000.
They added an amendment.
Per year.
They added an amendment to like take money from a surplus WIDA fund to pay for the grants. Now, they changed a little bit. I'm not getting into that whole really deep in the weed stuff. But the point is, general purpose revenue is the main checking account of the state that comes from your income taxes, sales taxes, corporate taxes, sin taxes, those things, okay? We call it segregated funds. Those are like fees, right? So if you can find money from outside that general fund to pay for stuff, Republicans in the Senate seem open to it. But everything you pull off the general fund is less money for income tax cuts, is less money to spend on things going forward. So there is a hesitancy to spend money from the general fund because some Republicans in that caucus were unhappy how much they spent from the general fund in the last budget that just signed in July. So there's a chance, you know, but...
Okay, let's talk about tougher on crime bills. Now, I put them in two categories. There's a few tougher on crime bills that are now on Governor Evers' desk, mm-hmm. and we may hear as soon as today whether he's going to veto or sign them. But there's also a package of assembly-passed bills that the Senate has to consider. Any thoughts on those, the general generic topic of tougher on crimes?
I get the impression there is less concern about the spending in these bills because they know they're getting vetoed. So it's not real. I mean, Governor Evers has said... In the campaign in 2018, he wants to find a way to reform criminal justice in Wisconsin, lower prison population. Republicans really take issue with one of the bill's fiscal notes that was put on it by the Department of Corrections. But that fiscal note says hundreds of millions more in new spending, new prisons, more prisoners. That conflicts with Governor Evers' philosophy of we should be looking at ways to reduce the population. So I think they feel comfortable knowing it's not going to become law.
You took the lead last week on the Assembly passed bill, state regulation of pharmacy benefit managers. Do you have a sense of whether the Senate's going to approve that one?
They haven't caucused yet, but in the open, in the public hearing, the executive session, when they voted on it, Joe Sanfilippo, health chair, said, we're changing the bill to reflect the status in the Senate of where they're at. So it seems like they made changes to get the Senate on board. I'll see if they push comes to shove, they'll do it.
Okay. Right before the Assembly adjourned, Nygren signed off on a small bill in terms of there had been major changes proposed for PFAS. But he took a little bit of the bite of the apple and said, this is the best I can get. That's pending in the Senate. Where do you think that is?
No clue right now.
Okay.
So I haven't seen really the reaction to the amended bill. And again, until the caucus, I don't make any predictions until then.
Now, the bill that would allow... anyone in 14 counties in southeast Wisconsin to drink till 4 a.m. during the Democratic National Convention. What's your gut tell you on that? An understandable issue.
I don't know. And part of it is You remember, Fitzgerald had this rule of thumb that he needs to have 17 GOP votes to pass anything. So if you need those 17 GOP votes, I don't know that they're there. But Fitzgerald is in a very good position to win a congressional seat right now. He won't. If he does, he wouldn't be there in the next budget. So does he say, you know what, the heck with it. There, these interests that want this, get this done. I'm just going to ram it through and get 17 votes, however it counts, from 14 Dems and hovering Republic. Maybe, I've heard that theory, maybe he does that. But there are serious concerns in the Senate about this bill. You had changes made from the version it was in before to try and address those concerns. I don't know they go far enough to win support.
But the Tavern League is okay with the 14 counties?
I didn't ask him after that amended bill passed, because they wanted other changes. They want other changes in that bill. They want to talk about wedding barns and other stuff
that
wasn't addressed. So
that's true.
That comes out. I've heard the theory of doing a clean bill, you know, just do the hours period, send it back to the assembly and say, okay, we did it. Now you guys embrace this. They will come back, you know, in May, probably for veto overrides. Is there a way to get on the floor? And we'll see.
Okay, on the drinking age bill, I'm going to stop predicting. Okay, Governor Evers named Brigadier General Paul Knapp to lead the Wisconsin Guard. The Guard is 9,600 members. He is now, it's a big title, it's an important job, mobilization assistant to the commander of the Air Force Nuclear Weapons Center. He will replace former General Donald Dunbar, resigned after an investigation found the Guard failed to properly investigate sexual harassment and assault charges. He is a native of Wisconsin, and we'll get to that in a second. Knapp, he entered the Air Force after graduating from the Air Force Academy in 1992, and I loved his quote. Let's get to it now. Being appointed as the Wisconsin Adjutant General by Governor Evers is a dream job for this kid from Anago, Wisconsin, who chose a military career. So we wish him good luck. We welcome him.
His task is clean up the problems left by his predecessor in terms of sexual assault and harassment complaints in the Guard. There's a task. I mean, there's this whole series of recommendations from implement.
So which the governor just signed off on.
So it's all there, but that's going to be the task of rebuilding that trust with the Guard.
Okay, let's just spend a little bit on the coronavirus. We're going to talk a little bit about, we're going to hear from Governor Evers, and I taped a newsmaker's interview with two Department of Health Services officials. So let's just go. The coronavirus totals in Wisconsin, as of today, checking with the Department of Health Services, the number of tests for the coronavirus, 17, the number of positive tests, one, that happened a few weeks ago, and obviously no coronavirus-related deaths in Wisconsin. So we've had one positive test. I just checked. There are 60 positive tests in the nation, but as we've all heard, health officials around the world and around America are holding their breaths. So let's hear from both the governor and a state Department of Health medical officer on coronavirus in Wisconsin.
Our health services staff is in constant contact with the CDC. And so whatever they're suggesting, we're following and making sure we get it out. The good news in Wisconsin is that we seem to have taken it seriously about social distancing, and that means staying at home. And there's only been, I can't remember the number of cases we've had, but it's a very small number. And we're hopeful that with those precautions, we'll be in a good place. But it's something that we take seriously, that's for sure.
The best tools we have now are the time-tested public health messages of respiratory hygiene, hand washing, staying home when you're sick, those things that we do every respiratory virus season. At this moment, there's not reason to think that this virus is spreading in Wisconsin, mm-hmm. and that we are not at risk of having much larger numbers. You know, I say cautiously optimistic, because what we don't know is the degree to which in other countries and in other states, community-based transmission will start to occur. Yes. So a week from now, we might be at a very different place. But right now, I think we're all on the same page in public health to say that mm-hmm. the risk to the general population for this virus at this time is very low.
2-minute drill on stock picks.
All right. Rising this, we have Brett Ludwig. He is a bankruptcy judge in Milwaukee. He has been nominated by the White House to become the next judge on the Eastern District of Wisconsin, a long vacant seat. I believe Conservative Justice Judge Rudolph Randa retired in 2016, died later that year. The first go-around, the White House tried to nominate Gordon G. Imperto to that position. U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin nixed that nomination by withholding her blue slip process, we call it. Now with Ludwig, you have an interesting case where it's an election year. Typically, it was tough to fill slots on the bench because of that. But you also have a majority leader in the Senate, Mitch McConnell, who's pushing to fill every slot he can that the president nominates. And you have a Democrat, Tammy Baldwin, who it's a home state nomination. Now, what's unique here is in Wisconsin, we think of the Federal Nominating Commission, which basically identifies candidates for the senators to forward to the White House for consideration. It gives some more, a little bit more control to the locals. It also kind of creates some moderation. So I don't think Ludwig is a Democrat by any stretch of the imagination. But because you have a Republican U.S. Senator, Republican in the White House, a Democrat U.S. Senator, you're going to get maybe a little more of a moderate candidate. So maybe this is a more palatable one for Baldwin. The question is, can she go along with this nomination on the floor? Unless she finds something like what happened with Gordon G. Imperto, where past comments on gay marriage came to light, the only thinking is right now she'll probably support him and he'll fill that spot.
You got a minute?
Retirements. Luther Olson, Senator from Ripon, the latest member of the legislature, announced he's going to retire. It's three now in the Senate. We are still short of what we had 2 years ago, where 20 members who started the session in January 17 decided not to seek re-election in that seat that fall either by retiring, joining the Walker administration, running for something else. We're up around, 15, 16 with more possible because, remember, you've got Tom Tiffany running for Congress, could win a special election in May. You've got Lena Taylor and Chris Larson, both Milwaukee Dems in the Senate, running for local office. You have David Crowley, Jocasta Zamarripa, Jason Fields, all Milwaukee Dems running for local office. So there's more change that could come. This hasn't happened just yet.
Okay, and falling?
Snowmobile safety. We had 3 deaths in Wisconsin last week, and tragically, that takes us to 17, I think, for the season, which is one more than last year.
Okay, thank you. Programming note. Wisconsin has lined up interviews with all 6 legislators who have announced they're retiring but not seeking higher office. Those interviews will start next week. Okay, JR, let's do some odds and ends. Former Senator Russ Feingold got a new job. He's president of the American Constitution Society, and the news stories that I read said the American Constitution Society is set up to fight the efforts by President Trump to stack the federal judiciary. Mm-hmm. Any thoughts on that?
Progressive liberal group.
Okay. Now, there were some changes with the DNC convention. The host committee that I'm not familiar with. So go.
Remember, early this month, they fired 2 of the top executives over a hostile work environment, the allegations of one. Today, they announced Raquel Flamanowitz. Sorry if I'm saying that incorrectly. She has been working for BMO, also worked in Tom Barrett's administration. She was the chief executive officer. Paula Pennebaker will be the chief operating officer. She is a longtime employee with the YMCA of Southeastern Wisconsin.
Okay.
Basically, what I was told is Raquel is going to kind of run the shop, and Paula will be in charge of kind of staff stuff, human resources things, both trusted local folks who've got long ties to community, bringing in the right to shift. They're also elevating 3 kind of people to senior advisor roles.
Yes.
One of them is Teresa Villemain, who was brought in kind of like to kind of serve the transition from the old leadership to the new leadership. She's going to be a senior advisor. Phil Walczak, who you may remember, worked under Tom Barrett's campaign back in 2010.
Yep.
And another woman who was already kind of working in a similar role, had worked for Gwen Moore. All 3 are kind of advising now the host committee and the National Convention Committee.
Right. And just one more programming note. Milwaukee County officials would like the ability to levy an additional 1% sales tax. It's not going to pass the legislature this time, but it does get a public hearing, Assembly Ways and Means, on Thursday. Wisconsin and I will be there. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for February 28.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.